You are now tuned in to the Raw Deal Podcast with your host, Frank D. and Atlee Green.
You're back here on the Raw Deal Podcast. I'm the host, Frank D., but I'm not alone. Once again, my tag team partner, Mr. Atlee Green. What's going on, big man?
I was having a good week until I woke up to some drama this morning, but other than that, I'm doing good, Frank D. I'm doing good.
Yeah, and why don't you go ahead and let the listeners know your social media.
Y'all can hit me up on Twitter at Atlee Green, and you can check out my blog at thegreenscreen.net.
Definitely check out youtube.com/Gurick Report Podcast today. That's the official YouTube channel of Gurick.net. Tons of interview content up there right now with Teddy Long, with the Honky Tonk Man, Vince Russo, you name it, it's up there. Like, subscribe to our channel. We definitely appreciate that. Over 700 subscribers on YouTube right now. That's unbelievable. Thank you very much. Continue to grow the YouTube channel. Subscribe today, youtube.com/Gurick Report Podcast. Also, if you like what you hear on the Raw Deal or the Gurick Report Podcast and you want to make a financial contribution, you can do so by going to ProWrestlingTees.com/Gurick. That's the official merchandise store of Gurick.net. 8 great designs, $19.99, plus shipping and handling will get you one of our shirts. So check it out today, ProWrestlingTees.com/Gurick. And we got a lot of topics to get to tonight here on the Raw Deal Podcast. Just got done watching Roadblock a little while ago. We're going to have our comments on that and other things going on. But Atlee, why don't you go ahead and address a certain situation from Breaking Raw.
As some of the listeners know here at Gurick.net, I started my own podcast called Breaking Raw at Gurick.net. I want to thank Steve Gerwick for giving me the platform to put the show on. I want to thank Frank D for, you know, working with me and kind of helping me get better at the podcast game. So I started the show and I had a particular co-host with me, and there was a lot of good feedback about the first episode. There was also a lot of bad feedback about the first episode, but particularly pertaining to my co-host. And I woke up this morning to, you know, a lot of messages, but I figured, you know what, I'm going to check it later. Then Frank D hit me up this morning and said, what's up with your co-host? And then I went on YouTube, he showed me the screen grabs, and basically my co-host kind of just threw me under the bus, and I'm going to kind of really just address that. I mean, basically, Frank D, you know this, I know this. You know, a podcast takes a very long time to develop. And I spoke with my co-host prior to recording our first episode, and we decided on a particular format. And if there were issues or concerns with the particular format we agreed with, I wish they were addressed with me at the time. And after listening to our first episode, I knew it wasn't perfect, but I expected that my co-host and I would talk about changes, implement, you know, certain improvements. And that even though I believe chemistry doesn't always happen from day one, I really, really believe, based on talking to him prior, that we would eventually find our groove and our chemistry would eventually appear and it would become a really good show. After the words written today on TV Tracks by, you know, my now ex-co-host about the podcast and the show Monday Night Raw, and there were a lot of accusations leveled against me, it's just not possible to work with him anymore. So Breaking Raw will continue, and I will have a series of guest co-hosts until I find a partner in this podcast that can be found, because, again, chemistry doesn't always come out right away. And I appreciate the patience of the fans. I apologize for anybody who found the show boring. Our listeners at Gurick.net deserve better. I'm going to strive to give you guys better, and I definitely want to deliver, and I'm going to work hard to deliver an exciting new podcast for everybody. And just as a heads up, this coming Monday on Breaking Raw, I have a favorite at Gurick.net. Cassidy Ash is going to be my special guest co-host, so I think you're going to expect a different vibe from the show this coming Monday.
Yeah, Atlee, the guy basically just went on and really borderline slandered you on the show.
No, he did, and I just wish, as I stated earlier, I wish he would have talked to me about it, you know, before stating it, because the fact of the matter is, whenever you get anybody does anything, whether you're doing a podcast, a blog, a column, anything that you put yourself out there with, you're going to get criticism. You're going to get good feedback. You're going to get negative feedback. And you got people who are just going to comment on you for the sake of commenting on you because of the fact that it's easy to hide behind a keyboard and say things to people that you wouldn't say to their face. Now, was a lot of the criticism that my co-host got and the show got warranted? Absolutely. We also got a lot of positive feedback that was warranted as well. And it was just a very unfortunate situation, a very unprofessional situation that, you know, things weren't addressed with me you know, behind the scenes and everything was aired out in public. And you really just can't work with somebody like that. So I wish him the best on whatever he does going forward. But in this podcast game and anything in life, you have to learn to let criticism roll off your back into the constructive criticism. You have to grow and learn from it. And unfortunately, he wasn't able to do that. So maybe he will someday. And I'm certainly going to grow and learn from this. And the next step of Breaking Raw will take place this Monday after Raw. It'll be on Tuesday at GoWork.net. And hopefully things will get better from there. I'm going to work hard to make sure they do.
Definitely. And let's start talking now about wrestling topics. Earlier this week, we found out that Mr. Anderson was fired by TNA. As a matter of fact, he went on a tirade at an independent show in which he started a fuck TNA chant, which we're going to play the audio for that right now.
From what I understand, you guys like TNA around here? No!
Heard it yourself there with Anderson and all the stuff he was saying there at that show. I mean, what's your take on this? I mean, we found out that basically he was fired by TNA because he was impaired during a match with Eric Young. And I mean, what's your thoughts here on Mr. Anderson?
First of all, you cannot be impaired when you're working a professional wrestling match, because not only does it put a risk to you, but it also puts you at the opponent you're working with at risk. So that's just a big no-no right there. Plus, for the longest time, Ken Anderson has been his own worst enemy. You gotta remember, during the whole Benoit thing, he went on CNN and talked about how wrestlers don't do steroids anymore, this, the new WWE. What happens? A few months later, gets caught doing steroids with the whole pharmacy thing. So, and then, of course, he almost breaks Randy Orton's neck and he gets fired for it. So then now he's in TNA, and then they drug test him, quote unquote. They fire him, and now he's saying fuck TNA. And it goes back to Ken Anderson is his own worst enemy. And plus, TNA is not the national spotlight, you know, like WWE is. Even though they may be, quote, the number two promotion in North America, they're a very long number two. It's not like they're a close number two like WCW was back in the day, or like WWE was back when WCW was, you know, the top promotion in the country. And you know, for the most part, TNA probably just doesn't drug test as rigorously as WWE allegedly does, or like the UFC does or anything. And they needed an excuse to get rid of Ken Anderson. They saw he was drunk, or they saw that he may have been high, or just inebriated, or he was on something. They drug tested him. He failed. They knew he was going to fail, and they got rid of him. And that's just going to, I hope he gets better. I hope he gets the treatment that he needs to hopefully, you know, fight this disease, fight addiction or whatever he's going through. But again, his resume shows that he is truly his own worst enemy, and WWE's not taking him back. TNA just fired him. And he really doesn't fit in with that Ring of Honor demographic. And you don't think Japanese strong style. So I really don't see him going to New Japan Pro Wrestling anytime soon. So I think he's going to be stuck on the indies for a while until he kind of cleans himself out, proves himself.
I don't know what the deal is with Anderson here. And, you know, I've never heard of any stories of him being impaired during a match before. So I was very surprised when this came out, and TNA is not the poster company to do drug testing. So it was kind of surprising, to say the least, especially considering that Jeff Hardy was inebriated during one match with Sting. If you remember that pay-per-view, I think it was Victory Road or something. So hopefully the guy gets some help. We don't want to hear about any casualties because of extracurricular activities that some of these guys might be doing out there as it relates to recreational drugs or whatever the situation is. And like I said, I don't know what the deal is was with Anderson. We're just reporting it and commenting on it. So that's just it right there with Mr. Anderson.
And Frank D, you did bring up a very good point about Jeff Hardy, because a lot of people would look at that situation and go, hey, if they fired Ken Anderson but they didn't fire Jeff Hardy back in the day when he was inebriated in his match against Sting. And to answer your question, yes, they also should have fired Jeff Hardy for being inebriated in that match with Sting. But you got to remember one thing, in any form of entertainment, people are not always treated fair. Stars get preferential treatment. Jeff Hardy, you know, was a star. Ken Anderson is not a star. Plus, TNA is in a much different place now than they were a few years ago, where if Ken Anderson is making, you know, a high-dollar contract, one of the higher-paid wrestlers, that may have been just a way to get, maybe he just, they got lucky and said, hey, he's screwed up on drugs, or he's high, or he's drunk. Let's drug test him. And that way we can fire him, get him off payroll. It may have been, for, I'm just speculating, but it may have been just an excuse for TNA to get him off of payroll. But nevertheless, the blame ultimately falls with Ken Anderson.
Do you think they still have those big money contracts down there at TNA?
They have a few. I mean, they're probably not as big money as they were during the Spike TV days. But, I mean, they've had Ken Anderson on their roster for quite some time. And they've never been able to make any money with Ken Anderson, and there are a lot of times where I forgot Ken Anderson was even on the TNA roster. But all that aside about him being fired and everything, if he is truly battling addiction, I do hope he gets some help, and hopefully he can defeat this thing, if he truly has an addiction problem.
Right, and that's the big if he does. And like you said, TNA could have just been looking for an excuse to let the guy go. I mean, Anderson really hasn't had that much of a push, I would say, since the Aces and Eights days. And that's the way we see it here on the Raw Deal Podcast with Mr. Anderson. So hopefully Anderson gets his act together and ends up somewhere. Personally, myself, I never was a fan of him. I thought the Mr. Kennedy shtick was kind of cool in the beginning. But then when he brought that over to TNA, like everything else that the Dead Man does, it just looked second rate to me. And that's all I got to say about Mr. Anderson. Let's transition over right now, Adam. Let's talk about Roadblock from tonight on the WWE Network. And what a show it was from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. We started the show off with the New Day versus the League of Nations, Sheamus and Wade Barrett. And I got to say, it was full-fledged babyface New Day.
Absolutely. I think that's what WWE wants going into WrestleMania, because you had the League of Nations comprised of Sheamus and Wade Barrett in this particular matchup. And I think WWE is aware of the fact that a lot of their fans are not really too enamored with the whole League of Nations deal right now. And they're really just the only reason they have any clouts as far as their characters, because they're really the muscle of the Authority. Like, when in doubt, the Authority calls the League of Nations to kind of do their dirty work and interfere in certain matches. So that's really what gives their character relevance on the show. Without that, they're really nothing. And as you said, Frank D, this match really gives you the opportunity to present a full-fledged babyface New Day as opposed to a heel New Day that acts like babyfaces. So it was a great, I thought it was a good match. And I was scared for Kofi Kingston, who he went for the leapfrog off the top rope for a crossbody, and he landed on his head, jumping over Sheamus. I was a little concerned about him, but he was able to rest for a little bit and kind of bounce back, so I hope he's going to be okay. But I think it was just, I think this match was just what the doctor ordered, and in the end, the New Day retained their tag team championship. But let's talk about the new product that's been released. A certain breakfast cereal is coming to shelves near you.
Yeah, Bootios. That's what they got going right now. And it's on sale at WWEshop.com right now, Bootios. It's not really a cereal. It's just pretty much a box. But as you and I were talking about, you know, offline, Abby, I'm surprised WWE hasn't reached out to, like, General Mills or somebody to make a Bootios cereal.
I mean, it's only a matter of time where General Mills, Post, or what have you, decides to sign on with Bootios if it catches on and gets traction. Because, you know, WWE, when they strike gold, they strike gold, and hopefully they can make something happen with Booty O cereal.
Definitely. And we go on to Chris Jericho versus Jack Swagger. That's right, you heard that right, people. Chris Jericho versus Jack Swagger on Roadblock. Now, when Jericho was cutting this promo in Canada, it was actually kind of funny, because I'm not really a Chris Jericho fan, but I was like, this dude is right on the money. This dude knows how to get these people riled up. And I was actually very, very entertained until he mentioned Jack Swagger. And I'm like, oh, shit. They're about to put the dude in the ring with Jack Swagger. And lo and behold, out comes the real American Jack Swagger in Canada.
I did like the promo because, again, Jericho has done this promo quite a few times. He actually has done it ever since he was in WCW, where he's a heel, he works in Canada, he gets the easy heat of just shitting on Canada, and it hurts a little bit because he's from Canada, and therefore it stings more for the Canadian crowd. But every time he does it, it's money. And it was definitely money tonight, where he told the Toronto audience to shut their filthy mouths. And he was like, oh, go ahead, cheer for AJ. You all cheer for AJ. He called himself the greatest icon in the history of the country, which he said with a straight face. And I absolutely loved it. And then a We Want Brett chant started. And then he just shut him out right away and goes, you're never getting that again. And I was like, oh, there's Jericho putting people on blast. And then he mentioned Jack Swagger, which was like, oh, yeah, you know, he's going to work with Jack Swagger. But I like the transition because he was like, oh, you all chanted for AJ Styles, just like you chanted for Jack Swagger when he beat me for the world title back in the day. So he also said he's not the flavor of the month. He's not the next big thing. He's the only thing in WWE. And he's just great as a heel. He's great as a babyface. He does it both ways very well. And with Jericho and Jack Swagger, the actual match, I thought it was a WWE Superstars match. Jericho got the heat early, and then Swagger got a few moves in, but then Jericho cut him off. And ultimately made him tap out to the walls of Jericho. And it was a good win for Chris Jericho heading into WrestleMania, where most likely he'll be involved in AJ Styles in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, but look what you just said there. You said that it was a Superstars match. This is Chris Jericho versus Jack Swagger. And look at where Swagger has gone to, man. I mean, here's a guy, you know, they gave him the World Championship too soon, in my opinion. Then they brought him back, tried to push him with Zeb Coulter. And then because of some stupid shit there, that angle got ruined. And they haven't really done anything with the guy. And they got him out here, and he's floundering, and he's jobbing to Chris Jericho. And it's like, you know, Atlee, really, what can you do at this point to salvage Jack Swagger?
I think with the right story and the right match at the right time, you can salvage anybody, and Jack Swagger is definitely one of those guys. But I think Jack Swagger is so off the radar right now that he's basically going to be a job guy right now. And even though we all like professional wrestling matches to be 5 stars, great spots, and all this other stuff, sometimes wrestling matches only serve one purpose, and that's to tell a story. Sometimes it's a big elaborate story, sometimes it's a simple story. And this was a Superstars match where the only point of this match was to get Chris Jericho over as a heel that is to be reckoned with. That was the only purpose of this match. There was no emphasis on Jack Swagger in any way, shape, or form. It was merely a means to an end, and Jericho is now established as a heel to be reckoned with, and hopefully he sees AJ Styles come WrestleMania.
What'd you think on SmackDown with Chris Jericho burning the Y2 AJ t-shirt, which is now people are saying it's a collector's item or whatever, and there's actually people selling this t-shirt on eBay for like $100. I mean, what's your take on that?
I love it because the whole WWE shop game has really changed, because if you remember, for the longest time, it took WWE a while to actually get a new t-shirt out for a particular wrestler or a new merchandise in general for a particular wrestler. And sometimes they get merchandise out much later than they should have. But now, in 2016, with like Redbubble and all these other websites out, it is so much easier to get t-shirts made of any design than ever before. You can instantly make t-shirts, instantly make coffee mugs, posters, what have you. I think WWE in the last couple of years has really adopted that to the point where now they can make merchandise whenever they want to. And I think a lot of people figured, oh, they made Y2 AJ shirts, so therefore, they're clearly not going to break up. And then, boom, they broke up a week later. So some people are kind of fooled that it's a collector's item. But hey, you know, more power to you. If you truly liked Y2 AJ and you really thought they're going to be something, by all means, you know, spend your $100, spend your $200. I ain't doing it, but, you know, good for you.
It's kind of funny, though, because they have the Roblox show happening in Canada earlier tonight. And then also you have, you know, AJ Styles versus Kevin Owens in an Iron Man match for the IC Championship out in Atlantic City.
You know, I was really hoping we would get an AJ Styles versus Chris Jericho match at Roadblock, because if the rumors are true and they're going to go out at WrestleMania, I would have liked to see Chris Jericho and AJ Styles have 2 wins apiece. But it looks like right now that they're going to go into the show with AJ Styles having 2 wins and Jericho having 1. Of course, they could wrestle on Raw and SmackDown before that time to even up the odds. But I like the decision they went with here because, again, the whole point of Jericho versus Swagger was to establish Jericho as a heel to be reckoned with, and that's what they did.
So the next match here saw the NXT Tag Team Champions defend their titles on the WWE Roadblock show. We saw the Revival take on Big Cass and Enzo Amore, with Carmella at ringside. And, you know, Atlee, it was a mixture here of the casual fans and the smart fans who watch NXT, because a lot of people weren't really into it in the beginning. But by the end, this was a hell of a match here. Everybody in this match worked hard, and I was more impressed with this match than I was with the opener with the New Day and League of Nations. I thought that this was the match of the night.
I agree with you 100%, Frank D. Enzo Amore and Cass versus Dash and Dawson, the Revival, was, without question, match of the night. And it's always interesting to see what kind of reaction NXT talent's going to get when they work on main roster shows. Because you got to remember, this show tonight, Roadblock in Toronto, was originally a house show. And tickets, for the most part, were sold out way in advance. And then with a couple weeks to go, they decided, hey, let's make this a network special. So people who bought tickets to this show weren't expecting to see NXT talent. So it was a little bit of a bonus. And when Enzo and Cash made their entrance to the ring and did their spiel, the majority of the fans were not with them. But when they got in the ring and then they're, let me spell it out to you, SWAFT, SWAFT, they kind of got the crowd with them. So that kind of gives you a sign that, you know, they're an act that can turn the crowd in their favor, which I think will bode well for them with their main roster chances. And then, of course, when you see Dash and Dawson, they remind me of the Minnesota Wrecking Crew and the Brainbusters. And in 2016, you wonder if that particular type of act can get over. And I even said to myself, when they make their entrance, nobody is going to react to them, which for the most part, nobody did. But I said to myself, they are very good wrestlers. They're two of the best wrestlers in NXT for my money. And I knew for a fact, once the bell rang, give them some time, and they will get over with their wrestling. And that's what these four men did. They got over with a great match, a lot of cool spots. It was actually a very creative presentation all the way through. And at the end, Dash and Dawson win clean, and they retain the NXT Tag Team Championship, which I was kind of surprised at, because not criticizing. I thought it was a good match. No problem with Dash and Dawson retaining the Tag Team Championship. But I thought it would have told a pretty interesting story that Cassidy and Enzo Amore, being the longest tenured team in NXT, finally win the NXT Tag Team Championship. And it's just a bit more sweeter that it happens on a WWE main roster show. But they decided to go to a different route where Dash and Dawson retained the belt. So, you know, great match. And I think they opened a lot of eyes to fans who haven't seen them before. I think they probably opened a lot of eyes to, you know, main roster producers or agents that probably haven't seen them before. And I think going forward, you might see all four of these guys on the main roster sooner than later. But I just wonder what Colin Cassidy and Enzo Amore do from here, you know, considering their NXT storyline.
You know, I was actually kind of surprised that they did not just pull the trigger and give the tag belts to Enzo and Big Cass, simply because we just saw this match happen at NXT TakeOver London. So I was actually thinking, you know, the Revival might actually lose the belts tonight. And it would have made the show a little bit more special to have a title change. You know, if we weren't going to get a title change, we already know going into it, we were not going to get the WWE Championship going to Dean Ambrose. That wasn't going to happen. But to see a title change on the show, it would have just made it even more special than it already was. But nonetheless, where do you see them going right now with Big Cass and Enzo? I mean, they've gotten the title shot twice already. They've lost twice already. I mean, is three times the charm here?
I don't know, because there have been rumors for a while that they're going to make their main roster debut on a permanent basis after WrestleMania. I'm not sure if that is true or that's just a rumor, but with the performance they pulled out tonight and be able to get the crowd in their favor, especially when the majority of the audience didn't know who they were, I think that bodes very well for them to be on the main roster sooner rather than later. But I wouldn't be surprised on NXT television that they tease a possible breakup between Enzo Amore and Big Cass. And I don't think it'll be a contentious, you know, I hate you, you hate me, you cost me a match. I think it might be just one of those things where, hey, you know, we've had two opportunities to tag team championship. We lost, longest tenured team here. Where do we go from here? Maybe we need to go our own separate ways. But I think they're much more valuable as a package duo as opposed to two singles wrestlers. And when you got Enzo, you got Big Cass, who's near 7 feet tall. WWE likes the big guys. We all know that. But again, I think the act is much stronger as a package deal with Enzo, Cass, and Carmella as opposed to putting them separately. So let's see what happens.
I'm with you on that. I think they are better as a package, but I can already see Vince McMahon looking at Big Cass and like, my God, this guy is 7 feet tall.
Oh, of course, because he likes the seven-footers. He likes his big guys. And Enzo, he is really small. I mean, he is a super small guy. But I will give him credit. I will give him props because he wasn't the best in the ring. But tonight, he showed that he is really improved as a worker. And I think it's going to bode well for him going forward.
Yeah, they're a modern-day version of the New Age Outlaws, just a different time now.
Perfect description. Perfect description.
We move on now to the Divas Championship. Yeah, the Divas Championship was defended tonight at Roadblock. We saw Charlotte defending against Canada's own Natalya. And I have to say, this match right here was second best match of the night.
I'll agree with you 100% on that, Frank D. It definitely gave the NXT Tag Team title match a run for its money. And quite honestly, if somebody actually told me, hey, I think Charlotte versus Natalya was match of the night, I really wouldn't argue with them because it was a really good match. And I liked the promo they had before the match, the backstage segment where Natalya dedicated this match to Bret Hart. And then all of a sudden Charlotte came in and was like, oh, you're not even in my league. And then Natalya just says, hey, if I'm not a threat, put the belt on the line. She laughs and she's like, no way. I got WrestleMania in a few weeks. I'm not putting the belt on the line against you. And then Natalya, which I thought was a great delivery, she says, well, I guess my Uncle Bret was right. I guess all the Flairs are cowards. And Charlotte fell just, she took the bait, put the title on the line, and we had the match. It was a good back and forth match. The crowd was kind of quiet for it at first, but they definitely picked up steam in the second half, and the crowd was into every single thing they were doing. And in the end, Charlotte got the roll up with her feet on the ropes, got the 1-2-3. And it was just a really good match. And some people do crap on Charlotte because some people feel she's not ready. She's not a good worker. Well, I don't think she's a great worker, Frank D. I think she's a good worker that's getting better. And I would say right now she's a much better character than she is worker. But I think the tune on that's going to change, you know, in no time.
Yeah, I like the line that Michael Cole used tonight where he called her the dirtiest diva in the game. I thought that was pretty good. But I also think that she plays off of Ric Flair's taunts a little too much, his woo and all that shit. I think that she needs to be in her own lane a little bit and do her own thing. And I think that's one of the things where people are going to constantly look at her. And, you know, it's Ric Flair's daughter, but people are always going to say, you know what, you're just trying to be like Ric Flair.
You know, that definitely can bite her in the ass because there are a lot of wrestlers, the second generation, third generation wrestlers that come out and they start trying to do the same thing as, you know, their predecessors, but then once it's time to kind of move on, they have nothing else to show for it. So hopefully, when it comes time for her to break away from Ric Flair, she can show something different that proves that she can stand on her own, and she's just not a female carbon copy of Ric Flair. But Frank D., what do you think about Natalya's new gear? I thought it was a kind of a cross between Trish Stratus and what the Hardy Boys wear in some respects, but I had no problem with it whatsoever.
Yeah, you know, her new gear, she debuted it a few weeks ago, as a matter of fact. I think I saw her wearing it on Superstars in a match she had, I guess, with Summer Rae. And it was another outfit she had on that was a lot more revealing than this one. So I have no problem with Natalya's gear. Natalya is very underutilized, in my opinion, on the main roster as far as the Divas go. And I think that, you know, she proved that she can go when the time comes. So why not give Natalya a push, you know, say after WrestleMania? But I will say this, as it relates to Natalya, one thing that I did like about her gear tonight was the T-shirt that she was wearing. It showed Bret Hart and Owen Hart, which she threw out to the audience. So that was actually a pretty cool T-shirt she was wearing there.
Natalya has always been kind of a class act, you know, behind the scenes as well as in the ring as well. And Natalya is just one of those workers that if you're a good wrestler or a bad wrestler, all you have to do when you're in the ring with Natalya is listen to her. And she'll take care of you. She is that good. She is just that good of a wrestler. And those kind of wrestlers, sometimes, unfortunately, they get lost in the shuffle because WWE writers, bookers, promoters, agents always feel, you know what? I can cash this chip in at any time, so I'm going to use this particular chip to make other talent better. And someday, you know, I will want this person to push them to the moon because I think she's only been a Divas champion once, which is kind of weird considering, you know, she is who she is. But I think her time will come eventually where they'll decide, hey, you know what? Let's give Natalya a push and see what happens and give her another round of the Divas Championship.
We go on now to one of the big matches that they advertised for the Roadblock event tonight. It was Brock Lesnar versus Bray Wyatt, or we thought it was Brock Lesnar versus Bray Wyatt, but it ended up being Brock Lesnar versus Luke Harper. And, yeah, I don't think a lot of people liked that very much.
They didn't, because it actually turned out to be a handicap match where Bray Wyatt came out and said he made a deal with the devil that's going to be him and Luke Harper versus Brock Lesnar. And basically, Wyatt got outside the ring, Harper did the dirty work, and then Brock Lesnar just did suplex after German suplex after German suplex after German suplex, and then finally gave him the F5, you know, 1, 2, 3, beat him clean in the middle of the ring. And as he was putting the beating on Luke Harper, Bray Wyatt kept on backing up more and more and more to the entrance, and once Brock Lesnar got his hand raised, he walked out, and he kind of punked Bray Wyatt back to the locker room a little bit. And I know a lot of people didn't like this because they were excited about the prospect of seeing Bray Wyatt versus Brock Lesnar one-on-one. And I certainly understand that. But when I saw everything unfold, Frank D, my thought instantly was they are saving this match for a bigger stage. Now, you might say, what do you mean by a bigger stage? What I mean by that is, Frank D, there was no build to this match. They just announced that it was going to be Bray Wyatt versus Brock Lesnar, and that was it. In fact, they actually changed their mind on this match quite a few times, where 1 minute it was Bray Wyatt versus Brock Lesnar, next minute the match was taken down. Then the next minute it was Brock Lesnar versus Luke Harper, and they took that match down. At one point it was actually booked as a handicap match for a couple hours, they took that down and put it back as Bray Wyatt versus Brock Lesnar. They changed their mind on the match time and time again, and they're saving it for a bigger show, whether it's SummerSlam, whether it's Payback, whether it's, you know, Battleground, whatever show they do, because at the end of the day, I think that Bray Wyatt, when he works with Brock Lesnar, he's obviously not going to go over. So I think you're in a situation where it's better to beat Bray Wyatt with 4 or 5 weeks worth of build-up instead of beating Bray Wyatt in a match or no build.
I'm looking at this as Bray Wyatt versus Brock Lesnar, possibly at SummerSlam. But it's kind of funny that we're talking here about Bray Wyatt getting punked out a little bit, because it's been reported that the Wyatt family are not going to have a significant role at WrestleMania this year. Bray Wyatt's not going to have a singles match. They're actually going to be demoted to the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, which I think is complete bullshit. You build up a faction. They have a really good showing at the Royal Rumble with Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar thinks he's working with Wyatt. Wyatt thinks he's working with Lesnar at WrestleMania. All of a sudden, those plans go awry. And now they're going to be in this Battle Royal, which I think the Battle Royal is pointless.
The Battle Royal is definitely pointless because, number one, you've had two winners, Cesaro and The Big Show. And the night after Raw, they got pushed a little bit. A few weeks after WrestleMania, they got pushed for a little bit. They kept on mentioning, this is the winner of the Battle Royal. They carried the trophy around. They got a few wins on Raw after the fact. But then, in no time, you forgot they won the Battle Royal. It was business as usual as far as how you booked Cesaro and Big Show. And Big Show's win in the Battle Royal meant less than Cesaro's because it was on the pre-show. At least they actually hyped the Battle Royal last year, but then it was on the pre-show. So far, there has been no mention of the Andre the Giant Battle Royal whatsoever. We assume it's happening. Most likely it's happening. All the rumors and reports suggest it is happening, but we have not heard anything that it's actually happening on TV as of yet. And Bray Wyatt winning a Andre the Giant Battle Royal on a pre-show that's getting no hype does nothing for his character whatsoever.
Coming in here on an update in post-production of the Raw Deal Podcast during this segment here, there is an update on Bray Wyatt. Apparently, Bray Wyatt is suffering from some sort of a back injury, and WWE officials does not want him taking any type of bumps, and that's the reason why he didn't do anything at Roadblock, and he is currently not advertised to wrestle at WrestleMania this year. The match with Brock Lesnar could still take place at a later date, but right now, WWE officials do not want him doing anything physical in the ring. That's what's being reported. Take it with a grain of salt. Now back to the Raw Deal Podcast. So we go on from this match here with Brock Lesnar and Luke Harper, and we go on to a surprise match, a surprise encounter that wasn't advertised beforehand. We saw Stardust take on NXT's own Sami Zayn.
Definitely a surprise match. And I think the match was, you know, it was a pretty good match. You know, nothing to write home about. I think the match was 5 minutes too long. I think this should have been a match that really showcased Sami Zayn as opposed to making it a back-and-forth competitive match where Sami Zayn has to gut it out to beat Stardust, because Stardust hasn't been used in any relevance whatsoever on TV in quite some time. And now you bring up this new wrestler in Sami Zayn who has the NXT rub. He's a new character. People are intrigued. What's he going to do? And then he has a hard time beating Stardust of all people. So, plus, it looks like they're going to put him in a WrestleMania match in some capacity. So this is really people's introduction to the character for the majority of the WWE audience, especially those who don't remember his match with John Cena back in May of last year. So I think even though there was nothing to complain about with the match, I think they really should have done a 4 or 5 minute match where you highlight Sami Zayn, he gets all of his big moves in, and he beats Stardust because it looks like he's going to be in the IC title situation at Mania. He's going to be getting pushed between now and WrestleMania, and hopefully they push him beyond that. So I think it was the wrong call, but again, the match itself, besides being a little too long, nothing to complain about. Sami Zayn hits the Mafia kick. I mean, I know they call it something else. I don't know what they actually call it. I think they call it the Hell of a Kick, but nevertheless, he hit that on Stardust, got the 1-2-3, and Sami Zayn is your winner.
Yeah, Sami Zayn is the winner, but what do we do with Stardust? I was like, man, Cody Rhodes really needs to drop this shit here. At first, I was kind of open to it, but the more and more I look at it, the more and more I think of, it's just a second-rate Goldust.
It really is. I mean, they don't do anything with the character. He does all this, like, intergalactic, you know, Infinity, Keymaster stuff, but it doesn't get over whatsoever because the writers don't do anything with him besides the fact of having him say these kooky promos. And the only thing is, like, I don't want to advocate for anybody to lose their job whatsoever. I am not advocating that at all. But Cody Rhodes has been with this company for quite some time. I think maybe close to 10 years. And he's had a plethora of gimmicks over the years. And he just hasn't gotten over at all. So is it a situation where you just haven't found the right storyline, the right angle, the right character to get him over? Or is it perhaps time to fish and cut bait with Cody Rhodes?
I think that they were over at one point. I think when they were doing their deal, when they were wrestling the Shield, him and Goldust, I think they were over. But my favorite incarnation of any character that Cody Rhodes has ever done, I loved it when he was doing the feud with Rey Mysterio and he was wearing that mask and you saw the darker side of Cody Rhodes. I thought they had money with that and they didn't go anywhere with it.
No, I like that because that was a very good gimmick. I like the mirror. I like the whole bag thing. I did like the idea of him being into his looks. I mean, a lot of people compared it to the narcissist Lex Luger, but I think Cody Rhodes definitely did it better than Lex Luger did. But just like everything else they've done with him, he gets a little bit of attraction. He gets a little traction, and then they pull back. And I don't know if it's because they have no confidence in him. I don't know if it's just because of something he might have done, whether it's in the ring or behind the scenes. I don't know, but it's always been this case of he gets a little something, they pull him back. He gets a little traction, they pull him back. And I just think, you know, if it hasn't happened by now, maybe it's never going to happen because I think you'll agree with me, Frankie. He's a better wrestler than his push implies.
I definitely agree with that. I think that Cody Rhodes has unlimited potential, but I'm just not feeling Stardust. And it's just, like I said, second-rate Goldust. I mean, from the whole makeup scheme to the music, it's all Goldust.
I mean, if he did the same gimmick but a completely different look, I think there's a chance whatever he's doing might get over or at least put him in a different light. But as long as he looks like Goldust and does this kooky character, you said it best, Frankie. He's going to be a second-rate Goldust and nothing more.
Right, which leads us to the WWE World Heavyweight Championship match. It was the champion, Triple H, defending against Dean Ambrose. And I have to tell you right now, I really enjoyed this match. Got boring at some parts, but nonetheless, it was a very, very good outing for Dean Ambrose that shows that he can actually stand in the ring and go toe-to-toe with Triple H.
And I think that may be the underlying story here as we head into WrestleMania because on Raw, Dean Ambrose said that you're going to respect me. I don't care what I have to do, even if I don't win, after Roadblock, you will respect me. And Triple H had a big smirk on his face saying, yeah, right, Punk, I'm not going to respect you. I'm going to beat your ass. And this match did have some boring things, but I think once the heat was over with and Ambrose definitely got his shine, I think in the words of Jim Ross, business definitely picked up with this match. I like the back and forth atmosphere that they went with. And I did, of course, we have to talk about the false finish where Dean Ambrose pins Triple H for the 1-2-3. And then it turns out Dean Ambrose's foot was under the bottom rope. And we had definitely have some opinions of that particular finish. I tell you right now, Frank D, when I first heard the 1-2-3, my first thought wasn't, oh, damn, Dean Ambrose won the belt. My first thought was, how are they going to swerve this? And they swerved us.
Yeah, they did. And it was like 2000 with Triple H and Chris Jericho all over again. Because I think the fans legitimately thought that he won the WWE Championship. And I just knew it wasn't going to happen. I knew they were going to do some type of bullshit, kooky finish. But I wasn't expecting that.
I did like the way it came out because they were teasing this particular show and this match in particular as the this could change the complexion of WrestleMania. And plus with this Dean Ambrose, which is the guy that most people do like, I think when you put the situation where he pins Triple H 1-2-3, you're like, holy crap, he won the belt. This really does change WrestleMania, but of course his foot was under the bottom rope, which, you know, I understand that when your foot's under the bottom rope, that means you're, quote, out of the ring, so therefore you really can't legally pin somebody. But at the same time, if you're the one that's pinning the wrestler and your foot is under the rope, it doesn't give the wrestler pinning somebody any added pressure, any extra advantage when applying a lateral press. So I think that rule is kind of stupid, but I understand, you know, foot under the rope has always been the rule of sorts, so I get what WWE was doing, but I thought it was for the most part well executed.
I think that Triple H worked hard. It was kind of cool seeing Dean Ambrose on the floor there doing the suck it a la the Young Bucks. So that was actually pretty cool. I thought it was a good match. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I love. I was just saying, I absolutely love the finish in this match because, of course, Triple H gets back in the ring. Dean Ambrose is down and out, doing his thing. And then, of course, the referee is applying the count. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And Dean Ambrose realizes, oh, I'm about to get counted out. He slides back in the ring just a nick of time, but of course, he slides right into the pedigree. And I love the psychology of the finish because basically Dean Ambrose was so worried about getting counted out that he wasn't thinking of anything else. And therefore, that allowed Triple H to take advantage of what Dean Ambrose was thinking. Lock up the pedigree, boom, hit it, 1-2-3. And Dean Ambrose definitely proved that he could go toe-to-toe with Triple H. So I wonder now if this plants the seeds for a possible heel turn involving Dean Ambrose, because even though Triple H beat him, they could do a storyline where it's like, hey, even though I won, you did earn my respect, and let's talk business. And if they're really going with Roman Reigns all the way as a top babyface, he needs opponents, and Dean Ambrose is a hell of an opponent for him.
Yeah, but when you do that, you take the risk of the people cheering for Dean Ambrose, even if he's a heel. If he faces Roman Reigns, they're still going to boo Reigns and cheer Ambrose.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. I mean, I think a lot of the reasons why they've kept Roman Reigns off of television is because they don't want him being booed for 5 straight weeks heading into WrestleMania, where he is in the main event for the WWE Championship. That's why they've been pushing Dean Ambrose versus Triple H for Roblox so much, because the longer they can push that match, the less time Roman Reigns gets booed. But at some point, they're going to bring him back on TV. Perhaps it's this Monday, and he's going to get booed one way or another. But it looks like WWE doesn't care about that. They really didn't care about it with John Cena. They still pushed him, and it looks like they don't care about people booing Roman Reigns. They're determined they're going to get that man over as their top guy, hell or high water.
What did you think of the fans tonight chanting for CM Punk?
People, stop chanting CM Punk. This is Atlee Green talking to you right now. Stop chanting for CM Punk. It doesn't get you over. It doesn't make you cool. Yeah, it was cool to chant CM Punk, you know, the first 6 months he was gone from the company. But now CM Punk has gone on to better things in his life. Hopefully they become bigger. He's with the UFC. He's actually training for a fight. He doesn't care about pro wrestling. In fact, he has actually said in a couple of interviews that pro wrestling is silly. He doesn't want to talk about pro wrestling in any way, shape, or form. Pro wrestling is the last thing on CM Punk's mind. It doesn't disrupt the show anymore. It doesn't hijack the show anymore. It doesn't make you cool. It doesn't make you sound smart. Get over it. He's not coming back anytime soon. Yeah, someday when water goes under the bridge, you know, fences are mended and hurt feelings become unheard again, yes, he'll be back, but just stop. This is Atlee Green talking to y'all. Just please stop. So cheer for CM Punk. Cheer for somebody in the WWE roster and help them get over.
I mean, Dean Ambrose is one of the most over guys in the company, yet he's in the ring locking up with Triple H, and I'm hearing CM Punk.
I mean, Toronto is definitely one of the, quote, smart fan areas, you know, as far as the continental United States goes. And it was probably just to kind of dig at Triple H because, you know, the heat involved, the backstage heat between CM Punk and Triple H. But just stop. I mean, CM Punk's gone. WWE and professional wrestling fans are way, way, way in CM Punk's rearview mirror. And let's just chant wrestlers that we actually want to get over. You know, if you let's say, for example, you like Curtis Axel, so they're chanting CM Punk, chant Curtis Axel. You know, if you like Adam Rose, chant Adam Rose. Use this time to get somebody over instead of just being like, oh, let's fuck shit up and chant CM Punk and hopefully we get somebody mad. It's done. It's tired. It's played out. Stop. Just stop.
I definitely agree with that. And on that note, Atlee, what do you grade Roadblock?
I give Roadblock a B-. I have no complaints about Roadblock whatsoever because at the end of the day, Roadblock was nothing. Was nothing great, nothing spectacular. The NXT Tag Team Title match definitely matched tonight, followed by the Divas Championship match. But at the end of the day, Roadblock was a by-the-numbers show that was simply designed to get from point A and point B. Nothing more, nothing less. And sometimes that's what you need to do, especially when you're heading into WrestleMania, and there's nothing wrong with that whatsoever.
I'm going to go ahead and give Roadblock a C, simply because I felt that the Jack Swagger, Chris Jericho match probably didn't need to be on the show. I'm going to give it a C. I think that it was designed basically to give Triple H a title defense heading into WrestleMania, and it did its purpose. It was a show, basically, if you did not have anything to do on a Saturday night, you can watch Roadblock. That's pretty much what it was. We're going to take a short break here on the Raw Deal Podcast. When we come back, we're going to talk about our top five worst WrestleManias. We got some listener questions as well as comments on the Johnny Mundo versus Rikishi. Stay tuned to the Raw Deal Podcast right here at Gurick.net. Hey, this is Frank D of Gurick.net. If you like what you're listening to right now and want to make a financial contribution to our show, check out ProWrestlingTees.com/Gurick today. That's the official merchandise store of Gurick.net. We have 8 great designs, $19.99 plus shipping and handling. We'll get you one of our great shirts. We have the Raw Deal Podcast t-shirt, Gurick.net t-shirts, and Gurick Report Podcast t-shirts. Once again, $19.99 plus shipping and handling. They ship domestically. They ship internationally. They accept PayPal, credit, and debit. So they got you covered there. Check out ProWrestlingTees.com/Gurick today. We appreciate your support.
This is Atlee Green from the Raw Deal Podcast, and I'm hosting a new show at Gurick.net called Breaking Raw. If you don't have time to watch 3 straight hours of WWE programming, it's all good. We got you covered. Breaking Raw, every Tuesday at Gurick.net. Gurick.net, your source on the World Wide Web for pro wrestling news since 1997.
And we are back here on the Raw Deal Podcast. You know, Atlee, it's been some controversy going on lately as it relates to Johnny Mundo from Lucha Underground. He's the former John Morrison from WWE. He had some comments to say about Seth Rollins earlier in the year, and now he's talking about Roman Reigns, basically saying that he would love to have a match with Roman Reigns in 10 years if Roman Reigns learns how to wrestle. What's your take on this? Because Rikishi actually responded to Mr. Hennigan.
There's 2 schools of thought on this. Either John Morrison, now Johnny Mundo, absolutely believes everything he said about Roman Reigns, or he's just doing this as a way to keep his name out in the public and probably create some heat. It's a possibility to maybe create some interest in a future Johnny Mundo versus Roman Reigns match. But if he truly believes what he said, I wouldn't be surprised, because you have to remember, I remember the tag team with John Morrison and The Miz. Remember when they broke up? Fans had Morrison pegged as the future of the business, a future main eventer, a future world champion, while those same people making future endeavor jokes at the expense of The Miz. What happened next? A few years later, Morrison was in the mid-card ranks while The Miz became WWE champion and he headlined WrestleMania. And there are a lot of bitter people in professional wrestling. And here with Morrison, you have a very talented guy who was heavily touted for years to be a future superstar. And now he sees a less talented superstar in Roman Reigns gaining opportunity after opportunity after opportunity to be the guy in WWE despite the overwhelming diminishing returns WWE has received thus far. And honestly, Morrison probably never got a slither of the chances Roman Reigns has had to become the guy, the face of WWE, and it might eat him up inside. And plus, you have to remember that Morrison was indoctrinated in the WWE way of doing things for the first 9 years of his wrestling career from 2002 to 2011. And, you know, once he started working independence, working in Japan, and eventually landing in Lucha Underground, he was enlightened because he realized there's more than one way of doing things in professional wrestling, not just the WWE way. And he probably feels bitter that, you know, WWE is just going with this guy that's not as talented as him. But at the same time, this all could be, as I said earlier, a work just to keep his name in people's minds, and hopefully he can turn it into something down the road if he ever goes back to WWE.
And what did Rikishi say in response to Mr. Mundo?
Rikishi said, basically, he listed all of Roman Reigns' accomplishments. He said, you were a mid-card guy. It's John Morrison. Well, you know, former tag team. My nephew's a former tag team champion, two-time WWE champion, Royal Rumble winner, and he's going to main event WrestleMania 2 years in a row. So he kind of just put Johnny Mundo on blast, saying, "Yeah, you're saying this, that, and the other, but yet, how do you going to say Roman Reigns can't work when WWE has put him in this position with all these accolades and all these championships and all the main events at WrestleMania?" So. It's kind of like a shots fired, as you said. You started right in Johnny Mundo's face, saying, "Hey, you're in the independents while my nephew is trying to do big business with the largest company in the world." And, you know, on paper, Rikishi is absolutely correct.
Bottom line here is, it seems to me that Johnny Mundo might be a little bit jealous here of the success of Roman Reigns and other people in WWE. I mean, like you said, people pegged him as the face of the company, and it went to the Miz of all people. And The Miz actually, you know, main evented at WrestleMania. He was a former WWE champion, while John, you know, Morrison was on ECW as the ECW champion. So I think he has, he's feeling salty a little bit when it comes to how they do business in WWE. But to take a shot at Roman Reigns, I don't necessarily think that's the best thing to do, since that is going to be their guy. Nonetheless, if he wants to find out what happened to his career, why he didn't go to the upper echelon in sports entertainment, let's trace it all the way back to Melina and SmackDown, when she was supposedly screwing around with Batista. And I guess upper management found out about this. Vince McMahon found out about this and says, "Okay, you know what? This guy is screwing your woman, but you're not going to do a damn thing about it." Vince McMahon right there lost all faith in John Morrison, basically says, "I can't believe that this guy can go out there and be a believable world champion if he won't even take care of business at home."
Oh, yeah. Plus, there was rumors going around that particular incident transitioned into a mindset with Vince McMahon where he just felt that he cannot buy John Morrison beating up anybody. And that put just not just a glass ceiling, but a cement ceiling over the WWE trajectory of John Morrison. So I think in the 2014 interview, John Morrison said that he left WWE due to injury as well as creative differences. And if John Morrison is trying to pop the crowd by just saying, "Hey, Roman Reigns needs to figure out how to work," that may be all he's doing, because you have to remember, as far as like the IWC is concerned, Lucha Underground is right now the cool new kid in school, and Johnny Mundo is a big proponent of Lucha Underground. And of course, what's going to get him more over at the IWC than great matches? Crapping on Roman Reigns, who nobody in the IWC wants to be the face of WWE. So it's a good way to kind of get some brownie points with the hardcore fans, the diehards that want to see Lucha Underground and don't want to see WWE, or especially Roman Reigns.
I definitely agree with that sentiment. And now we're going to transition into our top five worst WrestleManias of all time. Atlee, let's talk a little bit about the WrestleMania ticket sales. How many tickets have they actually sold for this event?
The Wrestling Observer is reporting that WrestleMania 32 is currently sold over 84,000 tickets, which officially makes it the highest drawing wrestling event for attendance of all time as far as WWE is concerned. Now, even though WWE has always claimed that the all-time indoor attendance record for their events is 93,173 for WrestleMania 3, in reality, that's a false number or an entertainment number, as WWE likes to say. WrestleMania 3 is actually their second highest drawing event of all time as far as attendance goes. WrestleMania 3, according to the Wrestling Observer, on March 29th, 1987, drew slightly over 78,000 fans. The legitimate record for WWE attendance is 78,927 fans for SummerSlam 92 on August 31st at Wembley Stadium in London, where it was headlined by Bret Hart versus Davey Boy Smith for the Intercontinental Championship. And even though it was 78,000 was the actual number, WWE announced it as 80,355. So now that WWE has legitimately sold 84,000 tickets, that's their highest drawing ever, the question becomes, what do they inflate the actual number to? Because they've legitimately beaten their own record, so now they can actually inflate the number to pass 93,000. Because whenever WWE announces their attendance for WrestleMania, they always inflate it from 10,000 to 15,000 more than the actual number. So my question, Frank D., is do you think at this point with 84,000, they push it and say they drew 100,000 fans, or do you think they'll try to save face and go, we drew 97,000 fans?
Vince is going to push it and say they drew over 100,000 fans. Look at what he was talking about Monday night when he was on the phone, supposedly. So no doubt, they want to break that, you know, inflated WrestleMania 3 record. So they're going to push it to 100,000 fans, definitely.
I agree with you 100%, Frank D, and I'll tell you why. Even if they did not sell any more than the 84,000 tickets they've already sold, Vince McMahon is going to say that they have 100,000 fans at WrestleMania. But they're going to sell more than 84,000. I don't know how much more, but it will be more than 84,000 because the NFL for the Super Bowl and the NBA for their All-Star game, they had over 100,000 people at their show. And that was because after they sold about 90,000 seats, they sold standing room only tickets, and that put the number over 100,000 people. So I think WWE at some point are going to release standing room only seats, and that's going to push that number well above 84,000. I don't know if they'll get to 100,000 legitimately, but you better believe come April 3rd, WrestleMania 32, WWE, Lillian Garcia's in the ring. She announces over 100,000 people. Now, to hear the guest, Frank D, like, they're not going to be stupid enough to say literally 100,000 people. They're going to have some number. Do you think it's like 100,000, like four or something like that? Like, what do you think the actual number will be that they announce?
They're probably going to say they drew 110,000 people at that stadium.
And, you know, they could feasibly get away with that because, number one, whenever they announce their attendance, they always say, oh, it's an entertainment number. But at the same time, most people, most news outlets don't call them on it because it's WWE, it's entertainment, and on top of that, why would you lie about attendance anyway? But we know when it comes to pro wrestling, Vince will work us on anything. At the same time, I mean, that building with standing room only seats can hold, you know, well over 100,000 people. So I think it's very possible that he announces a big inflated number, 110,000 people. Who knows? With the standing room only seats they got going on, they may actually get 110,000 or 105,000 people because a lot of people, even though it's only 3 weeks away, they want to be a part of WrestleMania because even though the card is not the best so far, a lot of people just want to be there just so they can say, I was there when WrestleMania 32 broke the all-time attendance record.
Yeah, I'm not thinking about it that way. I'm already looking towards next year's WrestleMania in Florida, which was announced that WrestleMania 33 is going to be at the Citrus Bowl. And I guess that's big news for Florida, that they're going to have WrestleMania 33 there next year. And they're also going to be opening up an actual physical WWE Hall of Fame. Now, we talked about this when we interviewed Teddy Long the other day on the GRP, which you can listen to that interview right now in its entirety over at Gerwick.net in the audio section. We also talked to the Honky Tonk Man, also in the audio section at Gerwick.net. But, Atlee, your thoughts on the physical WWE Hall of Fame that's going to be coming, they say, in 2017 at Universal Studios, Orlando, Florida.
I think it's about time, and I think it's the perfect way to do it with WrestleMania in 2017 going to Orlando, Florida, because if you think about it, Orlando, Florida is really the hub for WWE because NXT is filmed there. A lot of the wrestlers live in Orlando, Florida or near Orlando, Florida. They have a lot of events in Orlando, Florida. They're really ingrained in that community. And now that they're going to have WrestleMania at that Citrus Bowl and a completely renovated Citrus Bowl, I think, you know, if you're lucky enough to go to WrestleMania and get a ticket, I think it's going to be one of those events where the city of Orlando is completely taken over by WWE. I think it's going to be a WWE weekend when it comes to Orlando. And with the Hall of Fame, I'm interested to see what they do because I've been to the Basketball Hall of Fame that's here in Springfield, Massachusetts. And while it's cool to see all the people enshrined for the greatness that they, you know, applied to their craft in professional basketball, to me, it got boring quick. I mean, it's like, you know, plaques, memorabilia, you know, nets, and it's cool at first, but it got boring pretty quickly because it's kind of the same thing after a while. And I've talked to a few people that have been to, like, the Baseball Hall of Fame and other Hall of Fames, and they kind of say the same thing. You know, it's cool, but it gets boring pretty fast. But here's the thing. We're not talking about any professional sport. We're talking about WWE. And you know, when it comes to WWE, they like to dress it up. They like to give out a different presentation than anybody else. So I'm truly wondering what a WWE Hall of Fame is going to look like. And I think debuting it at WrestleMania next year is the perfect time to do it. And plus, it's going to be a restaurant at the Universal Studios, so I think they'll get a lot of walk-in business for that particular attraction.
Definitely, because I know I'm going to be going. I mean, I'm already making my plans for next year's WrestleMania, so I definitely will be at WrestleMania 33. Speaking of WrestleManias, Atlee, let's go ahead and talk about our top five worst WrestleManias of all time. And this was a combined list between myself and Atlee, where we had to actually sit back and just think about all the WrestleManias. And this is the list that we compiled, but knowing us here, the way we do things on the Raw Deal, we might add a couple more. So, right now, let's start with WrestleMania 2. And this is a WrestleMania that took place in three different cities. And I have to tell you right now, this show was a clusterfuck.
Or it was from top to bottom, because I think when you look at the situation, they had three big main events that put a lot of eyes on the product at that time, but there's really not a memorable match on the card. And some people might say, well, you're looking at WrestleMania 2 with 2016 eyes. No, I'm not, because for years, I've been a wrestling fan for years, and not one person's ever told me, or I've never heard it one person ever say to me, you know, WrestleMania 2 was one hell of a show. And I just think that the whole thing of going from three cities in a simulcast, New York, then Chicago, then L.A., I really just think that it didn't work out because they had more celebrities at WrestleMania 2 than they've had at any other WrestleMania. And plus, I think they, especially that Chicago show, they had to rush a lot of those matches. I mean, Nikolai Volkov versus Corporal Kirstner in the flag match, that match was like maybe a minute 30 at the most, and Corporal Kirstner won, and they forgot to hang the flag. I mean, they rushed a lot of matches just to make sure that Hogan and Bundy got their time in the cage. And of course, for that time, it was a big spectacle. People were really looking forward to seeing, you know, what would happen between those two. But overall, as you said, it's a clusterfuck. And I think WWE knows that. That's why they've never again done WrestleMania in three different cities, or two different cities for that matter.
Well, here's my thing. The only thing I can take from WrestleMania 2 that I really, really enjoyed, the only memorable, you know, thing I had from that whole show, was Ray Charles singing America the Beautiful. That was it. Next on the list of our top five worst WrestleManias, we go to WrestleMania 9, 1993, Caesar's Palace, Las Vegas, Nevada. WWE had full spectacle going on here. And it was a show that was a main evented by Bret the Hitman Hart defending the WWF Championship against Yokozuna. But also we saw a tag team match, Money Incorporated defending the tag team championships against the Mega Maniacs of Hulk Hogan and Brutus the Barber Beefcake. And Hulk Hogan came there, and I'm telling you, it looked like somebody whooped his ass. But they didn't. It was probably, I heard two stories. It was either he got hit by a jet ski or Randy Savage whooped his ass the night before. That's what I heard.
Well, the Randy Savage rumors were going around for quite some time. And being how Randy Savage is, I wouldn't doubt it if he decked Hulk Hogan. But nevertheless, WrestleMania 9, I think it's one of those shows that just, it'd be Jim Ross debuted on that show. That was his debut in WWE. But when you look at the matches, like the opening match was Tatanka versus Shawn Michaels for the Intercontinental Championship. Nothing wrong with the match whatsoever, but I think at that time you might have expected a little bit better. And of course, this WrestleMania was hyped around the fact that Hulk Hogan was making his return to WWE, tagging with his boy Bruiser Brody Beefcake to go against Money Inc. for the Tag Team Championship. And it was interesting to see Hulk Hogan win a championship, or might win a championship that he had never held before. Of course, he didn't. But also, WWE was in Bret Hart mode right now, where they were pushing Bret Hart as their new top babyface, and he was going against the new monster they were establishing in Yokozuna. Of course, you had Crush versus Doink, where the second Doink came out and knocked out Crush, and of course, they did the mime thing, and Doink won. And of course, Bobby Heenan, brilliant on commentary, just calling him, hey, it's David Copperfield. And then Macho Man goes, yeah, well, Crush is going to kill David Copperfield then. So, you know, some gems from Bobby Heenan as always. And then you had the five-star classic of Giant Gonzalez versus The Undertaker. And Frank D., what are your memories of that memorable match?
you know what, man? Honestly, when I was a kid, right, WrestleMania 9, the VHS, was the tape I rated the most. But as I've gotten older, and I watch it over network pretty regularly when I have some free time, the match was garbage. But Gonzalez was a hell of a much better worker than Kali. I'll give him that. But the match sucked. Everything about that match sucked. Undertaker came out, had a cool entrance, but other than that, it sucked. And then you remember also on that card, you had Razor Ramon versus Bob Backlund. Bob Backlund was supposed to be the babyface. Razor Ramon was supposed to be the heel, but the people were cheering for Ramon. You also had the Narcissist making his WrestleMania debut against Mr. Perfect in a match I thought was actually going to be pretty good, and it sucked.
And it's weird with that match because if you remember, all throughout the broadcast, they were talking about how Lex Luger knocked out Bret Hart at a charity event. That right before the Bret Hart-Lex Luger match, they showed Bret Hart at the podium at the charity event doing his thing, and then Lex Luger came out of nowhere and knocked him out with that steel plate forearm. This was before, you know, we knew that there was a steel plate in the forearm, and it kind of was weird because it's like, okay, you're building up Bret Hart versus Lex Luger, and we haven't even got Mr. Perfect versus Lex Luger, which is the match you've been building for 3 months. So it was kind of weird. You weren't really sure how to take it. And then, of course, after Luger pinned Mr. Perfect, and Mr. Perfect had his foot on the rope, referee didn't see it, and then, of course, he knocked out Perfect after the fact. Perfect went chasing Lex Luger, beating him up in the back, and then Shawn Michaels came out of nowhere and started helping Lex Luger. That turned into a transition where it was went from Mr. Perfect and Lex Luger to Mr. Perfect and Shawn Michaels. That's how their feud started, so that was kind of interesting to see how that all unfolded. But it was really the Hogan show, because we all know what happened, and we got to definitely talk about that. Bret Hart loses to Yokozuna via salt in the eye from Mr. Fuji. Hulk Hogan comes out, checks on his buddy Bret Hart to see if he's okay, and then Fuji, for some reason, gets on the microphone, and after his man just had a hard-fought match, goes, hey, Hogan, we want to challenge you. We want to challenge you to a fight. Hogan ignores him because he's so concerned with his friend, and then Fuji just goes him a little more. Hey, we'll put the belt on the line right now. That's how confident we can beat you. Hogan's like, damn, you're going to be a title shot right now? And, of course, Bret, which must have been hard for him to do, is telling him to go for it. And, of course, you know what happened. Clothesline, leg drop, 1, 2, 3. Hulk Hogan's your new WWF champion. Frank D., what were your thoughts watching it then and watching it now when Hulk Hogan came out of nowhere and won the belt?
Well, first of all, my thoughts were, when the hell did Hulk Hogan and Bret Hart become such good friends? That was the first thing. The second thing was, pretty much, I thought this actually kind of sucks, really. Because I wasn't a Hulkamaniac, man. I wasn't a Hulk Hogan fan. So it really sucked to me. But it popped the crowd. The people were into it. But knowing the backstory about it and knowing that Hogan didn't want to job to Bret Hart, and I guess they had been building towards a match between these two at SummerSlam that year, and Hogan didn't want to do it. He felt Bret Hart was too small. It really just kind of shits on the whole thing. So it kind of leaves a bad taste in your mouth a little bit because knowing the circumstances about it now.
As a kid, I loved it for about the first 2 weeks because I was a big Hulkamaniac. but I was also a big Bret Hart fan. So I was really happy to see Hulk Hogan get the world title back. But after a couple of weeks, as a kid in middle school, I couldn't really articulate the facts, and I really didn't read the internet or read dirt sheets or anything. But I really ended up feeling bad for Bret Hart because I was like, wow, like no one seems to care about Bret Hart anymore. It's all about Hulk Hogan right now. And Bret Hart is, you know, worked his ass off ever since he beat Ric Flair for the championship in October 92. He's been a fighting champion. He's took on all challengers. And now, instead of getting a rematch, he's being put in a tournament where he has to wrestle three times in the same night. Now, a great tournament, great matches, all executed by Bret Hart. You know, it was a really good show that he had a lot to do with. But, you know, as a fan, I really had mixed emotions about it. But now, looking at it with adult eyes, it's like, Hulk Hogan was being Hulk Hogan. He wanted the belt. Vince went into panic mode, and he's like, yeah, let's put it back on Terry. And, of course, we all know what happened. It's funny because he wouldn't lose it to Bret, but he would lose it to Yokozuna because Yokozuna was a big guy. And you got to remember, before that match at King of the Ring, Hulk Hogan wrestled on New Japan Pro Wrestling show, and then after the match, he was holding the WWE Championship belt, and he said, the WWE Championship belt is a toy, a trinket, compared to the IWGP Championship. That's the belt he actually wants to hold. And people were telling Vince McMahon, hey, you know, he said this, right, in Japan. Because there's no internet, there's no nothing. You just hear everything word of mouth. Vince wasn't really sure if he believed it. He asked Hogan. Hogan point blank said no. And from reports I've heard, Dave Meltzer actually sent Vince a copy of the tape showing him the promo that Hogan cut. And once Vince saw it, I guess that was just the beginning of the end of their relationship, which caused Hogan to lose the belt to Yokozuna on the way out at King of the Ring.
5 times World Wrestling Federation champion. This belt is just a toy. It's like a trinket on a Christmas tree, like an ornament. The belt that I want is the one that the great Muta has, the IWGP belt. Because when Hulk Hogan wins the IWGP Championship, which he should have right now, it will prove that New Japan Pro Wrestling and Hulk Hogan is the greatest partners in the world, because I want all the great wrestlers to come to me, and I want them to come to Japan where I can wrestle and not bullshit. I want to wrestle and prove that I'm the best.
Yeah, but you got to remember, at this point in time, the business was really in the shitter anyways due to the steroid allegations going on at the time. So at King of the Ring, when Hogan dropped the belt, it didn't really matter. And, you know, the next year he would be in WCW going for the WCW Championship against Ric Flair. So, there you go. Next on the list here of our worst WrestleManias, we got WrestleMania 11. And this was a show that was headlined by Lawrence Taylor taking on Bam Bam Bigelow, also followed by a WWF Championship match between Diesel and Shawn Michaels.
WrestleMania 11 is just one of those shows that had all the grandeur, all the hype, and all the spectacle. And going into it, it was one of the, I mean, as far as news coverage, like legitimate news coverage, I had never, at that time, I had never seen a show mentioned on the news more than WrestleMania 11. I mean, people who normally didn't talk about pro wrestling were talking about WrestleMania 11 because they all wanted to see what would happen when Lawrence Taylor got in the ring with Bam Bam Bigelow. And it was interesting because it made people fans of pro wrestling, even though the buy rate really wasn't that good for the show, because it was really during a time in 1995 where WWE was anything but hot. And a lot of people still feel to this day that Diesel versus Shawn Michaels should have been the main event, because not only was it a better match, but because it was for the WWF Championship. But besides that match, which was pretty good, and we all know the story about how Shawn Michaels tried to outwork Diesel, so therefore he could kind of prove he belongs in the championship, which might have actually worked considering the next year he won the championship from Bret Hart. So who knows? Maybe he got his wish that way. But besides that, I mean, you had the opening match with the Blue Brothers taking on the Allied Powers. Bayley's just a match to establish his new tag team. But one match I was really looking forward to was the I Quit match between Bret Hart and Bob Backlund. And man, I know he didn't know it on purpose, but Roddy Piper ruined that match with, instead of just letting one guy or the other scream, you know, I quit, I give up, he had to put that damn microphone in their face, which really kind of cut off the flow of the match. Every time Bret and Backlund got a little something going, Piper runs in with the microphone, sticks it right in their face, like, do you give up? And then, of course, Bob Backlund, when he gets put in the chicken wing by Bret Hart at the end, he screams, yeah, which is, like, I guess his way of saying I quit. He didn't say the words I quit, but he said, yeah. And then when he walks back to the locker room, they're interviewing him, like, did you see the light? I saw our light. And then he announces that next week on Raw, he's running for president of the United States or something like that. So I think WWE's problem with this show is that they really just focused on the celebrity aspect more than the wrestling aspect. There were a ton of celebrities. They showed Nicholas Totoro. They had Jonathan Taylor Thomas, Jenny McCarthy, Pamela Anderson was in the corner of Shawn Michaels, but ended up being in the corner of Diesel, actually. They had the all-pro team for the NFL, one of them being Steve McMichael, who a year later would end up in WCW and eventually a member of the Four Horsemen. So Salt and Pepper was there, but they really should have called this Celebrity Mania as opposed to calling it WrestleMania.
Yeah, I didn't like this pay-per-view at all. And it also featured, I believe, Undertaker versus King Kong Bundy as well. So I didn't really care for it. And it's not one of those ones that will stand the test of time. And it's like, oh, you know, if you're bored one day, let's go back and watch WrestleMania 11. That shit ain't going to happen.
One thing I did like about WrestleMania 11, actually, was the tag team title situation, because it was Owen Hart and the Mystery Partner versus the Smoking Guns with the tag team championship. And the Mystery Partner ended up being Yokozuna, and I loved Owen Hart's delivery on that, because when he cut the promo announcing his tag team partner, he was feuding with Bret Hart at the time. He was that stubborn little brother that always wanted to beat his brother, and he announces him as, this is the man who beat my brother Bret for the WWF Championship, my partner Yokozuna. And that's one of the things I remember about WrestleMania 11 the most. Besides that, you know, not really a show for me.
Which leads us on to our next one on the list here, WrestleMania 15. And this show here, Adley, was all about the new WWF attitude. WWF right here at this point in time in 1999, they are kicking WCW's ass in the ratings. And it was a pay-per-view that looked promising on paper. But my God, it was one of those shows where you kind of scratch your head at some of the decisions and choices that they made during the pay-per-view, and especially when it comes to that Hell in a Cell match between The Undertaker and the Big Boss Man. I mean, you talk about clusterfuck.
I think this is a prime example of a show that was good for its time, but it doesn't hold up, especially when you look at it with 2016 eyes, because, as you said, in 1999, WWE was running on all cylinders of the Attitude Era, kicking WCW's ass, and they were really ingrained in pop culture, where they were the highest-selling merchandise outfit, where they were going neck-and-neck with South Park. People who normally didn't watch pro wrestling were all in on pro wrestling. It was one of the most popular things going on in the United States, thanks to, you know, Austin 316, DX, and all that other stuff. And, of course, the big match was The Rock versus Stone Cold Steve Austin. And I think one of the reasons why WrestleMania 15 doesn't hold up now, even though it was great for its time, is because now you've seen that Rock and Austin have had better matches. I mean, this definitely wasn't one of their best matches at the time. Yeah, it was pretty good. Triple H turned on DX and turned heel, joined the corporation. Okay, yeah, whatever. And then Shin McMahon beats X-Pac for the European title. You know, it was all right. I mean, nothing to write home about, but you were shocked that Shin McMahon actually, you know, had some talent in that ring. And then, of course, Butterbean knocks out Bart Gunn, which is an example of what you were talking about in some kooky booking decisions, because you had to have figured that they were just setting Bart Gunn up to fail, because there's no way with 12 weeks of training that Bart Gunn is going to beat a boxer the caliber of Butterbean. Now, say what you will about Butterbean's boxing prowess. The guy's been boxing for a very long time, and Bart Gunn was not going to beat him with a 12-week training camp. So that was kind of dumb. And then they kind of flip-flopped the New Age Outlaws, because for most of that particular time, you had Road Dogg, you know, he was in the hardcore title picture, and Billy Gunn was in the Intercontinental title picture. Then on a whim, they flipped the script. So it was the opening match was Billy Gunn versus Al Snow versus Hardcore Holly for the hardcore championship, and then it was a four-way, you know, with Goldust, Val Venus, Ken Shamrock, and Road Dogg for the Intercontinental championship. And even though I wasn't an internet wrestling fan at that time, I even found that to be a little weird as somebody who just, all he knew was what was on the screen.
Yeah, I don't get it either. And you're right. They flip-flopped the Outlaws there, and they went for two different titles. And that was kind of like a really strange situation going on there. And stranger was the fact that we saw the Big Show turn face by knocking out Mr. McMahon and went on his way, you know, no longer part of the corporation.
Yes, because that the stipulation with Mankind and Big Show was the winner will be the special guest referee for Steve Austin versus The Rock. And Big Show lost. McMahon was pissed, slapped him in the face, and then Big Show punched him and Big Show got arrested.
Yeah, great, great times. Like I said before, man, Hell in a Cell match was shit. The Undertaker's entrance was cool, but the match was shit. It was one of the worst. I don't know what the hell was going on that night. I mean, I don't know if it was just Boss Man was, you know, uncomfortable in that type of environment, but the match was garbage. And it's one of the worst Hell in a Cell matches I've ever seen.
That match had a hard act to follow because you had Shawn Michaels versus Undertaker at Bad Blood 97 in the first Hell in a Cell match, which is a great match. Then you have King of the Ring 98 with Mankind versus Undertaker, where we all know what happened there. Mankind fell off the top of the cage, which is one of the most infamous clips in WWE history. Then you have the Big Boss Man versus Undertaker in Hell in a Cell at WrestleMania, of all places. So you're kind of thinking to yourself, how are they going to top those last two matches? Well, not only did they not top those last two matches, they didn't even try to top those last two matches because knowing, you know, things now and looking in perspective, Boss Man wasn't going to take some crazy bump off the top of the cage. And I'm just thinking it was coming back from a hip injury as well. So it definitely wasn't a match to write home about. And remember, Undertaker got handcuffed to the cage and the handcuffs broke a couple minutes later, and we all saw the finish where Boss Man got Tombstone 1-2-3. The Brood came down from the sky, propped up the Boss Man, and he was literally hanged with a noose as the cage lowered. They made it look like he was dead, and I think WWE was gonna hopefully use that moment as the shocking moment to continue the trend that hey, this is the kind of stuff that happens in Hell in a Cell. But unfortunately, Boss Man being hung by a noose via the cage just came off very lackluster, fell very flat, and it's one of those matches that people just don't remember because it sucked.
Yeah, it sucked big time, and the only thing about it, like I said, that I liked was Undertaker's entrance going into the match. And they had the main event, you know, The Rock versus Stone Cold Steve Austin. Stone Cold Steve Austin actually lost his vest or some shit, and he actually had to wear a t-shirt to the ring. So that's one of the things that he remembers about that match. You know, they've had better matches, like, you know, like you mentioned, but it was okay. It was a decent match.
Oh, there was nothing wrong with it at all, but I just think when you look at their other matches, it's, you know, it doesn't really hold up. And Steve Austin actually said in his book that, you know, he was really disappointed, and he almost didn't want to tell The Rock he was disappointed because The Rock was on cloud nine after that match in the locker room, but he just felt, you know, I have to be honest with him, and he actually feels his match at Backlash the following month in 99 was better than the WrestleMania 15 match.
Yeah, they had a really good match at that pay-per-view. And, you know, noteworthy, newsworthy to happen at WrestleMania 15 was, like you mentioned earlier, Triple H turning heel, joining the corporation, reuniting with China on screen. And that was it for WrestleMania 15. I mean, it was full-fledged attitude.
Oh, but we have to talk about the botch that Michael Cole did before the main event. I'm not sure if you remember this, but this is when WWE was pairing up with the Home Shopping Network, and they were advertising that after every pay-per-view, WWE was going to be live on the Home Shopping Network selling exclusive merchandise you can only get on that channel. So right before the main event began, they aired a video package showing exclusive WWE merchandise on the Home Shopping Network, and Michael Cole said, make sure you join us for the Home Shopping Network to watch WWE after WrestleMania, where there will be an interview with the new WWE champion. And he pretty much gave away the finish right there and then. And then right before the match starts, Michael Cole goes back to the locker room and they announce that Jim Ross is going to be the special commentator for the main event because it was Michael Cole and Jerry Lawler doing commentary up until that time. And I remember that there was an internet rumor going around that WWE was trying to spin it by saying that The Rock asked Vince McMahon for Jim Ross to commentate the match. And that's why they had Michael Cole leave. Not that he botched the finish or gave away the finish, but I don't know if that's true or not.
Yeah, I vaguely remember that, and I'm going to have to actually go back on the network and see if they actually kept it in. Knowing them, they probably didn't. But that's crazy. I remember, you know, at that time too, they were doing stuff with Home Shopping Network, and WCW was doing stuff with QVC. So good times, good times.
Oh, yeah.
And the last one on our list here, and you know what? Let me just say it right now. There are lots of bad WrestleManias, but we only had enough time for five. And as we get closer to WrestleMania, we're actually going to come up here and talk about some of our favorite WrestleManias, some of our favorite matches from WrestleMania history. So stay tuned to that. But I think we both agree that WrestleMania 27 takes the damn cake.
Absolutely, because, again, you have a good match with Triple H versus The Undertaker, and you had that really good spot where Triple H nails Undertaker with the tombstone, and you thought that the streak's over, and of course, Taker kicks out. So that was a really good match, but besides that, nothing else of note happened at that WrestleMania, because even though the main event was The Miz versus John Cena, which is, you know, not a main event that's going to set the world on fire by any stretch of the imagination, the main event of the show was really The Rock being the special guest host. And when you're a special guest host during that time, you have general manager-like powers and authority. So that was the whole deal, is that The Rock is back, you know, more than this match is happening or that match is happening. And a buddy of mine went to WrestleMania 27, and he said even though the show was kind of lackluster in moments, you know, the audience was all in agreement in one thing. They did not want to see John Cena leave Georgia Dome as the champion. And when The Rock cost John Cena the championship and Miz retained, they were really happy. But it's kind of like, really? That's really what you want from a WrestleMania? Like our general manager appearance opposed to actual matches? And of course, you had Randy Orton versus CM Punk. And I agree, that was the perfect time to put CM Punk over. But Randy Orton went over. You had Cody Rhodes versus Rey Mysterio. Cody Rhodes went over unexpectedly. That's when Rey Mysterio was dressed as Captain America. And you thought maybe bigger things were on the horizon for Cody Rhodes, getting a clean win over Rey Mysterio, but nothing materialized as a result. And it was just really a lackluster show that after you watch the next night on Raw and they made the match, John Cena versus The Rock at WrestleMania 28 a year out, you realize that, damn, this WrestleMania was simply done to promote the next WrestleMania, WrestleMania 28. That's all it was there for.
And you know what? They had a lot of dead spots in the crowd, too, during that show. I remember The Core came out to really no reaction whatsoever. And Cody Rhodes came out to no reaction whatsoever. Alberto Del Rio came out to no reaction. And that was actually the last match for Edge at WrestleMania.
It was the last match for Edge at WrestleMania. And it's actually the first match they promoted, because that's when they were still promoting matches for WrestleMania a lot further out than they do now. And that's because Del Rio won the Royal Rumble that was held in Boston that year. It was the biggest Royal Rumble with 40 participants, and he got to choose which belt he wanted to go for. And it was like at the end of January where he decided he's going towards Edge for the world title. It ended up being Edge's last match. But I think it wasn't a bad match by any stretch, but I think what really hurts the gravity of that match and the importance of that match is when it was the first match on the card. They put the World Heavyweight Championship match as the opener. Now, granted, we knew that match wasn't going to main event the show. It wasn't going to close the show. But the fact that you put that match first really just kind of took the wind out of the importance of the match a little bit.
I definitely agree with that. And it really devalued the World Heavyweight Championship, in my opinion. And before we close out here on the Raw Deal Podcast, we have a listener question. By the way, if you have any questions here for the Raw Deal Podcast, send them to GerrickReport@gmail.com. Once again, GerrickReport@gmail.com. GerrickReport@gmail.com. Demo from Sacramento, California asks us, he says, now that WWE primarily has their pay-per-views through the network as opposed to traditional system of ordering pay-per-views through a cable company, do you think it would be a good idea to cut down on the number of pay-per-views each year? If you look at the NXT specials, they have less shows, longer storylines over time, yet the matches end up delivering in the end. Typically, WWE is lackluster post-WrestleMania, yet they seem to kick in high gear once SummerSlam comes around. Then they just phone it in during the rest of the fall season. What are your thoughts?
Well, I do agree with the emailer, and thank you very much for sending in the question. Thank you for listening to the Raw Deal Podcast. I agree with them, because WWE is, for a long time, I've always felt that a pay-per-view each month was too many. I understand why they did it during the Monday Night War, because they're competing with WCW to a lesser extent, ECW, but now that they're the only game in town, there's no reason to do a pay-per-view every single month, or sometimes twice a month. But that's the mode that WWE is currently stuck in, and the mode that they've been operating at for well over a decade now. They have a pay-per-view each and every month, and I think it helps their writing form, where they can, instead of, because I don't think their writers today can write and build a 4, 5, 6 month long storyline. I mean, I think Jericho versus Shawn Michaels, the program they had, you know, where it was 6 months straight, and ended with the ladder match where Jericho lost his tooth but won the championship, I think that was the anomaly. And you're not going to see that again for quite some time. And I think the way Vince McMahon changes his mind all the time, sometimes hours before Raw goes on the air, he changes his mind on creative decision, writing decisions. I don't think that creative team is in a position where they can book long-term or write long-term. So I think 12 pay-per-views a year and then some are here to stay.
Yeah, I'm definitely in agreement with Demo here. They definitely need to cut down on the pay-per-views. That's one thing I do like about the NXT brand, is that they stretch these takeover shows out. So it gives a time to build the storyline, mature the storyline, and see where it flows. But WWE, like, we got WrestleMania. I'm pretty sure a couple weeks after Mania, there's another pay-per-view that's going to be coming up, and then another pay-per-view after that. So, yeah, they definitely need to cut back on the shows, definitely. I think we all agree with that. It's just too much. And I'm all for them doing these specials like Roadblock. I would like to see them maybe even add some house shows to the network. I mean, essentially, that's what Roadblock was. But you know what I mean. Like, you know, if they're going to be in, you know, say, Detroit, and they're going to have a WWE live event there, maybe they can, you know, put that on the network. Because the live events are actually cooler to go to than TV. It's much more laid back, much more fun. And on that note, we're going to go ahead and close up here on the Raw Deal Podcast. Atlee, go ahead and plug your social media one more time.
Y'all can hit me up on Twitter at Atlee Green, and definitely check out the second episode of Breaking Raw, which will be happening this Tuesday at Gurg.net, where myself and Cassidy Ash will be breaking down WWE's flagship show.
And check out youtube.com/Gurg Report Podcast today. Like and subscribe to our channel. We definitely appreciate your support there. Like I said earlier in the show, over 700 subscribers now on YouTube. That is very, very good for us. And we definitely appreciate you guys taking the time to check out Gurg.net on YouTube. So once again, youtube.com/Gurg Report Podcast. Also, if you want the shirt, get the shirt today. ProWrestlingTees.com/Gurg. That's the official merchandise store of Gurg.net. 8 great designs, $19.99 plus shipping and handling. They ship domestically. They ship internationally. They got PayPal, debit, credit, whatever, you name it. It's on there. ProWrestlingTees.com/Gurg. And for Atlee Green, I'm Frank D. For the latest in pro wrestling news, keep it locked to www.gerweck.net, Gurg.net, and we will check you next time here on the Raw Deal Podcast on Gurg.net. Check out youtube.com/Gurg Report Podcast today. Subscribe to our channel, like our videos, leave your comments. We definitely appreciate your support.